Hey there, it's time for yet another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is the third one today, if I manage to get it out before midnight at least. And we just got home from dinner, and the first day of E3 2012 is over. Now, we already had an episode early today talking about Nintendo's big press conference, so if you haven't heard that yet, please go listen to it first. I'm here, this is Johnny, and I'm here with Guillaume and Zach Miller.
Hey, howdy.
Hey, guys. Wanted to get a kind of a smaller group, a more intimate session, because we all played so much today in a very short period of time that having nine people in here all say, what was your favorite game? The first game going around would take an hour. So yeah. I thought, let's cull down the list a little bit. We'll probably get some different people on tomorrow night and talk about different things. But I think all of us pretty much just spent the whole day in Nintendo's booth. I played, feels like, about three-fourths of the demos over there. I really got to play a lot of things. I think most of us were productive today.
Oh, yeah.
I got around. We didn't have to do a lot of walking back and forth from one company to the next because we were really focused, and so we got to spend a lot of time playing the games. So I figured let's talk about, you know, I've got the games that I played are over a dozen that I've got the list here. I can't talk about all of them on this podcast, but we'll try to pick out some of the coolest ones. I want to start off by asking you guys, what was your favorite thing? What was the thing that you played today that you felt kind of was magical or that just got you really excited to play more of it?
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, well, that says something right there, but, you know.
Okay, well, I wish I had had a better Pikmin 3 experience. I wish I had picked the nunchuck and the remote controller.
I heard that a lot.
Yeah.
Because that was very good.
The game is very good. I can tell that when you can control it properly, like, it's going to be a ton of fun. But aiming with a tablet, unfortunately, feels like aiming in Skyward Sword, you know. And yes. I'm not totally used to it because I haven't finished that game. But yeah, like, it's not immediately intuitive, like, using the pointer. And it's, you know, there's this little shakiness to it. There's this little, this danger of, like, the cursor drifting and all those problems. And also, like, for some reason, like, the tablet seemed to be reversed. Like, you would point up by raising the tablet. Actually, no, that makes sense. At the time, like, it took me, like, some mental gymnastics to get around the controls.
It's sort of gyroscope-based, right? And it doesn't seem intuitive that you would control this reticle on the screen for where you're going to throw your Pikmin based on how you tilt your controller. While you're also doing all this other stuff, you're moving your character and you're trying to deal with the enemies and the items and you're throwing Pikmin.
A little like aiming in Ocarina of Time 3D. A little bit.
It's not quite like that because you're not holding it up in front of you, you know, sort of using it as almost like a viewfinder into the world.
Yeah.
You're looking at the TV. You're not looking at the gamepad. You're just tilting the gamepad around.
And that moves the cursor around.
Yeah, your comparison to Skyward Sword is accurate. It is gyroscope-based aiming, and it felt a little janky. And the first time I played Pikmin 3, it was that way, and I thought, oh, this is bad. You know, it looked pretty. It certainly plays like Pikmin. In fact, I would say my only criticism of the demo, really, other than the weird gyro aiming, is just that they don't really show anything new about the game. Yeah. You have the rock Pikmin, but they function, from the demo, they seem to function exactly like the purple Pikmin from Pikmin 2. So it's like you kind of get basically they've proven that Pikmin exists on Wii U, but like beyond that, I'm not getting a real sense of like what's new about this game and you know what has changed in the 9 years or so since Pikmin 2 came out. It's not really clear to me yet. It's basically just a very small peek into the game, and you get the feeling this is a big game. Like there's a lot to it.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of hinted this morning that there's just a lot going on, you know, and there's a lot of strategy that you can have in big levels. You got four characters and you're multitasking with all this stuff, and none of that is in the demo.
No, but that was cool. Being able to, especially like when you're done with a level, you get that little replay.
Mm.
And you can see, oh, okay, I could have done this quicker. I could have gone here.
Like in the context of an E3 demo, that is not useful. I just skipped it. But yeah, if you think ahead to like you're at home and you're playing this, not only could you use that for yourself, but you think about all this Miiverse stuff that they've been talking about and how it integrates into different games. That replay becomes a very good interface for people to leave comments like, I went here and found a secret in this spot, mm-hmm. or this is where I used a certain technique to kind of save a lot of time and be more efficient,
yeah.
you know, or I managed to do this part without losing a lot of Pikmin, you know, and here's how. And you can see that people would be able to use those replays as a way to share
yeah.
those kinds of tips with each other.
Yeah.
So here's the good news. I did play it with the remote.
Oh,
the
Nunchuck, I did too.
And it felt way better.
Yeah.
Way better.
It's like new play control Pikmin. Exactly the same.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I didn't play new play control Pikmin, and I was surprised. I always felt that it would be good. I just never got around to, you know, I'd already played those games. But I was surprised in how having the cursor on the pointer, not only does it feel very natural, and it's very quick to move it around, you know, it's very, very fast. It's not necessarily tied to the way Olimar's facing, so you can actually shift directions much more quickly.
Right.
But also, you can point that thing much farther away from Olimar because you control not only the direction around him, but also the distance away from him,
mm-hmm.
much more than you could with the joystick in the original games. And so you can throw Pikmin, like, a lot farther than you could in the previous two games.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting, and I thought that worked really, really well.
And not just, like, throw them, but also call them. So, like, you can call
if they're the way Pikmin over there, really you can, far. Yeah.
Did you guys feel that the Pikmin needed more sort of management to pick them up? Because I felt like in the original, they would always kind of by default come back to you, mm-hmm. you know, when they got done doing a task, they would run back to you, or when they got done attacking an enemy, they would come back to you, and this one it felt like you told them to do something, they would go over and do it, and then when it was done, they would just sit there, and then you had to go get them, and it was annoying when they're taking items back to the base, because every time I have to walk all the way back to the base. And I wonder if that's just a demo thing. You know, I wonder if they just haven't put in the AI yet to have them return to you.
Well, not only that, but it seemed like the controls still really aren't finished on the gamepad.
Oh, on the gamepad? Yeah,
they don't have, like,
they the better not be finished.
Yeah.
But, right. In neither version do they have the formations where you can make them line up and then spin them around.
Right.
And I use that a lot in Pikmin 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they'll add that or something like it, you know.
Well, in the Nunchuck remote one, you could press C to change their formation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we're like, you know, like when he whistles and you hear like the little fanfare when they're moving around.
Oh, yeah.
So that was not in the demo.
You're right. Now, speaking of Pikmin, did you guys play Project P100?
No, but everyone keeps talking about it. What is this?
It's crazy. That's why people are talking about it.
Yeah. So it's kind of similar in the way that you move this central character who seems to be a superhero of some sort.
Right.
And he goes around and recruits citizens. And the way you do that is you've already got kind of your troop. And you move around with the left stick. With the right stick, you move a line starting from your character. And you can kind of lasso around citizens. And then, like, you enlist their help. And so
you can also draw these lines on the screen. But I found that it was easier to do with the joystick.
Yeah.
At least in the demo. Because there are also gestures that you do on the screen to initiate certain attacks. Game seemed to have trouble deciding whether I was doing one of those gestures or drawing a line to lasso in citizens.
Mm-hmm. But you can do also like the gestures with the C-stick. Not the C-stick, the right analog stick. And so like you would basically... you could just like draw a line, and then the citizens would form this giant sword
mm-hmm.
that you could use.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, or you could do a circle, and then it would become a giant fist. And I'm not sure what exactly the differences are between those two attacks, but the person demoing the game told me, you need to switch between the attacks very often because otherwise, like, you're going to lose power. And you could also draw an L, and then you would have a gun, and then that's, that's not another melee weapon. So that mm-hmm. a little bit more...
Well, the fist, the red fist shape could be used to manipulate things in the environment. So.
Also, yeah. And so, like, you would go and you would see these giant gears, and so you would go next to them, you use the fist, and then you would rotate the right stick once you had latched on to those gears, and then, mm-hmm. you know. To open a door or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you could go inside this kind of garage-looking building. And when you go inside buildings, then the view switches to the Wii tablet. And then it's over the shoulder, third person view. It's
very close up and hard to see what's happening.
Yeah, I was completely disoriented.
Yeah, me too.
But it was a lot of fun. Like those enemies, like they really, it seems crazy, you know, sci-fi
giant
Japanese
mechs and stuff. Yeah, like
that. You've got like incredible, like not helicopters, but like vessels or whatever, like crash landing, and then you need to bash them, and then like gigantic tanks come out, and I don't know, like it had like this great energy, and it's from Platinum Games, right?
Yeah.
So it didn't look like I would expect a Platinum game to look.
I'm glad you brought this up, because yeah. I completely agree. When I was looking at it, and it looks kind of like, you know, even more than Pikmin, to me it looked like Little King's Story. You know, this kind of, it's in this sort of urban, like modern urban environment, neighborhoods, all very brightly colored, you know. Also could say it looks a little bit like Katamari Damacy, especially with these people who you're picking up and adding to your cadre of citizens, you know, who fight with you. So it looks like these kind of overhead, you know, strategy games. Mm-hmm. Pikmin is a very easy comparison for sure. It's like an urban Pikmin, right?
Right.
And that's immediately what I thought of. And when I started playing it, I was really surprised because it certainly, like you said, doesn't look like a Platinum game. It's a much more sort of colorful and
cartoony.
You know, a little bit, yeah. But once you start playing it, it feels like a Platinum game because it's very fast and responsive. Your character, here's the thing, the biggest difference is between this and Pikmin is that the character that you control is much faster, can jump, and instead of having all these indirect attacks where he's directing troops to go and attack things or he's throwing his troops at the enemy and letting them do the work for him, he turns the troops into his weapons, into his melee and his projectile weapons. So it felt like there was a lot of combat, and the combat felt much more engaging and in one-on-one, and it's also very quick. Mm-hmm. And it has dodging, and it has guarding, and all of a sudden it's like, well, this kind of feels like almost like a character action game, you know, like Bayonetta or you know, something like that. So like right off the bat, I was like, wow, this plays a lot differently than it looks. And if you just see screenshots or even video, it could be a little bit deceiving.
You would think like strategy game or something.
I don't think it's a strategy game at all. I think it's an action game.
Yeah.
But it's an action game from a very unusual perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, this kind of overhead isometric thing.
Yeah, and you don't have camera control because the right stick is used to lasso or like to draw lines.
Well, I'll have to play this tomorrow. It sounds intriguing.
It's very unusual. I thought it was a lot of fun. Yeah. Really, a lot of fun. I mean, the demo is a little messy, perhaps, you know, but loads of potential there. And I definitely like Platinum games a lot. And this was like one of those sort of out of left field things. You know, it wasn't shown at Nintendo's press conference. We didn't know what it was. And you just kind of show up on the show floor and you're like, what's that? There's literally a game there I've never heard of and I know nothing about. And you walk up to it and you just start learning. Those are fun times, you know.
All the demos I played were a little dodgy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's demos.
That's the way it is, yeah.
That's E3, yeah. You know.
Well, there was one demo that wasn't really dodgy, and that was Super Mario Brothers I'm confused. What is it?
Yeah. Super Mario Brothers U.
Awesome. Yeah.
They should call it U Super Mario Brothers New.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, that was very polished. It had a very, very polished demo.
That would be,
came out a few years ago, right?
You know, it reminded me a lot of the new Super Mario Brothers Wii. I have to make sure I say the right one. The Wii game that we saw 3 years ago, I think in 2009. Very similar kind of demo, very similar setup. And the game is very similar, you know, make no bones about it. But I thought it was really fun, actually. It was more interesting and more fun to play than I expected. And the squirrel suit has a lot to do with that.
And the three stages that they were demoing had tons and tons and tons of secret stuff that you could easily miss. Like, so there's this ledge, and, like, you could go inside, like, you know, behind a fake wall or, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it looks like they cranked up the amount of little secrets in the environment.
And there were, like, areas also, like, above the ground that, you know, like, well, yeah, in the sky that I didn't know. Like, we watched them play the game, them being like the game's creators during the the Q&A session, and yeah, like I had played that level like 3 times already, and like they showed me, oh, okay, like there's even more secrets that I hadn't seen. So yeah, it seems very rich. Like if every level can be like that, I could see myself replaying them over and over again just to find everything.
Right.
And then you can post about it on Miiverse.
Absolutely.
On each level.
Yeah, the Miiverse stuff in Mario is not all that interesting, really, but, you know, it's kind of neat. I mean, it seems not that interesting when they talk about it. Maybe when you play the game and you actually experience it, maybe it's
Dark Souls for Mario.
I'm just not sure that I want the game pulling me for my mood after when I've died 10 times in the same place.
How'd you feel about that,
yeah,
Johnny?
They could probably guess how I feel about it, actually. They probably don't need me to type it in. So,
if there is one thing, though, like it's that for all those secrets in every stage, like the reward was pretty much always the same. A 1-up. And I wish that they would find something, I don't know, something different. Because the life mushrooms are just not really rewarding anymore, especially when you can get to 99 so easily. Like, you find, like, 8 per level, then it's not really, they're not so special.
Right. You know, the exciting thing about Mario for me, and if this hadn't been in that demo, I would be so down on it, but it made all the difference, is that squirrel suit.
I like that.
It's not just that it's a new power-up. Because we've seen a lot of new Mario power-ups in the past few years, and a lot of them, I think, have been disappointing. Mm-hmm. They're time-based, you know, they're like limited time usage, or they kind of just make you invincible, you know, which they've had since the original Super Mario Brothers. But the Flying Squirrel Suit is, to me, a great power-up. I was telling one of the reps as we're playing the game. I mean, what I love about it is that it makes movement totally different in almost every way. Mm-hmm. So it really forces you to play the game in a completely different style. It has multiple effects, so it's not just one simple twist on what you're already doing. It's kind of like it really does force you to platform in a totally different way from top to bottom. And it's not necessarily strictly better than just plain Mario.
Yeah.
It has certain, maybe not drawbacks, but because it plays so differently, it changes the physics of what you expect to happen when Mario jumps or when he falls.
Yeah.
And so you have to get used to it. And for some people, they might find that, like, dealing with it is, you know, maybe more difficult than just playing Mario as regular, you know. So it's not like it doesn't make you just into this crazy godlike character who can just run and fly over everything or just run through
Super
everything.
Super Mario 3D Land, where, you know, the raccoon tail was a little bit like the easy mode, especially on the harder levels. Like, it would give you a lot of chances.
Right.
Or, yeah, especially the Tanuki suit.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, this was the most like the cape. And it is literally like the cape in a lot of the ways that it controls. Mm-hmm. It's certainly different as well. It's not just a total retread of the cape. But also in the spirit of it, it felt like the cape to me in the sense that it does at least 3 or 4 different things, but also it's not necessarily easy to make it do the things that you want it to do. You feel like you really have to kind of get used to it and learn it.
It changes
and
the way you explore the level.
Right. Yes, I was pretty excited about it. It really felt good. It really, really did. So I was very happy about that. And if they've got a couple other power-ups maybe that are kind of the same style, then to me that makes a game right there. And then the level designs were really good, like you said. So I mean, if they can combine all that, then they've got a pretty good Mario game on their hands.
Yeah. So what did you think, though, of the other power-up that we tried in demo, the Red Yoshi? The small Yoshi that you can carry around.
That balloons up. You know, it was interesting in the sense that it certainly kind of didn't move the way you expected it to, right? And it was easy to overdo a certain jump. You know, it was easy to float over the things that you wanted to get.
Right.
You know, it wasn't clear whether the baby Yoshi would grow up.
No, yeah, they wouldn't answer that question.
Right. They were being coy about it. But I do like the idea of having multiple colored Yoshis that all have different abilities. I think that's very promising.
That's
right. Can you imagine like having like four differently colored small Yoshis, 4 different people, just like the chaos on screen?
And the guy
already,
doing the blocks on the Wii U.
Sounds good.
Gamepad.
Yeah. But I was already like having fun like kind of like just like kicking the Red Yoshi and catching it back like in midair and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think if you've got like several people who know what they're doing, just like juggling Yoshis, that could be really spectacular.
So let's talk about boost mode really quickly. I get to play it. I don't know if you guys did.
I didn't. I played with someone else.
Who was doing it.
Yeah.
Were you annoyed by them?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I don't really need it when I'm... But, like, yeah, like, I'm not perhaps, like, the person to be... who would ask for help, you know?
Who would want that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can use it to sort of troll the other players and, like, put blocks in their way.
Yeah.
Which can be funny. You know, I'm not sure that this series needs more ways for the players to fuck each other up.
No.
But there is one now. It can be helpful. It can help you get to like higher locations or save you from falling into a pit if the other player is very quick about it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But as playing as the person who was drawing, who was, you know, putting these blocks on the screen and everything, I got a little bored. I felt like there wasn't enough for that player to do, especially if you're playing with people who are doing the platforming who are competent, who don't really need you to help them get through the level, because then, you know, I can sort of put blocks over the pits as they go over them, but they're just going to jump over them because they didn't really need that, right? Yeah. So it's like I'm just sort of building safety nets for everybody, but they don't really need me, and you can tap on the enemies, but it doesn't kill them. It just sort of stuns them. Yeah. Again, a good player doesn't really need that. It's not very helpful.
It's just going to mess up his timing anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't pick up the coins. You can't even pop the bubbles when someone dies and they float back on screen. I thought that was very strange. Mm-hmm. They'll probably fix that because that seems obvious
seems
to
like
me.
Seems like something that should be in there.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel like it's potentially a very good idea, and having the blocks there... is kind of hilarious in its own way, and there's certainly some interesting stuff you can do there, but I feel like the player probably needs more options to interact with the game beyond just putting the blocks on there. Yeah. The other things they have in there seem very trivial right now.
Yeah, and this mode really pales in comparison when you look at the asynchronous multiplayer for another 2D platformer game, Rayman.
I was about to bring that up, yeah. Really good.
It is.
Really well implemented.
And, like, you played as the second controller, like the pad.
I only played in the rhythm part of the level, because Patrick, I think, was doing the part before that, where he was doing more of the rotating stuff. That looked really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The part that I did with the rhythm, I was really just kind of tapping on the eyeballs when they came across, and I couldn't hear I couldn't hear the music, so it didn't quite have the same effect.
It messed up my platforming as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like it was like a rhythm game for me as well. Like I was doing the platforming part, and you had to time like, okay, I have to hold like not only the jump button but the attack for this long, like during this note, so that I can fall like on the platform correctly to make the next jump. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun, Yeah, like, it was strange. Like, it was as much a rhythm game for me as it was for you, probably. It's still Rayman, though.
Really impressed with...
Yeah.
I played the platforming, and the guy who was playing with the pad, he clearly knew what he was doing. He'd either played it before, or he instantly knew what he was supposed to do, but we were just kind of in sync the whole way. Like, he must have played Origins.
Right.
Because he kind of knew what to expect. And, man, I mean, I loved Origins. Have you guys played that?
Yeah.
Not very much.
Oh, it's so good. It's a kind of platformer where you get into a rhythm with it, and you can go all the way to the end.
Yeah, kind of like Donkey Kong Country Returns.
It's
got the same kind of momentum to it.
Yeah.
Except that you don't stop to blow one side.
You never stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it looks gorgeous. I mean, they improved Origins' look, and... Yeah. I was just blown away. That was my favorite game that I played today.
Yeah, I had heard complaints from someone who said, like, oh, it doesn't really look, like, distinctive anymore. Like someone was afraid that Rayman would mesh with the background because it doesn't have, like, kind of the black outline anymore. Now it's kind of a softer look a little bit. Like, the colors are a little bit more pastel and a little bit more kind of spread, but it's not a problem at all.
No.
I thought it looked really nice. Yeah. I mean, I don't have as much of a point of comparison with the previous game, but I mean, geez, they're only coming a year apart, apparently, you know? So the fact that they look different at all is kind of surprising.
Yeah.
You know, the interaction between the character playing as Murphy, the sort of fairy or the bug or whatever it is on the gamepad touchscreen, and the person who's playing as Rayman was a lot more interesting than what we saw in Mario. That's for sure. I thought it looked really cool. But my question was, I mean, clearly a lot of thought went into how, into these levels and building challenges. Building challenges. Yeah, but my question was, how do you play through this stuff by yourself?
That's what I wanted too.
Or are these levels only for when you have multiplayer?
Yeah.
And if so, how much of the game is this stuff versus the sort of more four-player, non-touch-based stuff that you had in Rayman Origins? And the people there didn't know it. But I was kind of wondering, because I'm sure this game is also coming to Xbox and PlayStation, and so I wonder, like, is this going to amount to just only four or five levels that they had time to make for the Wii U version that are sort of exclusive to that, and they make good use, maybe very, very good use of this feature, but it ultimately is kind of a very small part of the game, and the rest of it is sort of just more of the same from what you had in Origins last year.
Well, it's not. At the Ubisoft press conference, they only showed it off for Wii U.
Right.
And they had two players playing with controllers and one player playing with the tablet.
Right.
But then they didn't have Rayman upstairs in the South Hall at all for in their Ubisoft. I mean, they had it for Wii U, but they didn't have it for any other system.
Yeah,
so I wonder if it's an exclusive.
Clearly they're focusing on that version, but... Yeah, maybe it's a timed exclusive, you know? Maybe it's coming sometime next year for the other systems without the, the touchscreen-based stuff.
I really like
the Pro controller.
Wii 360 controller.
Yeah.
Wii U 360
I liked controller. It a lot, too.
Yeah.
Jared was exactly right yesterday when he got to sort of sneakily play it at the Ubisoft press conference. And, you know, he noted that it's really light and it feels exactly the same weight as the classic controller Pro.
And
I thought, how can that be? But it really does, yeah. And it's funny because it has the kind of contours of the Xbox 360 controller. You sort of expect it to, but it weighs less than half of what the 360 controller weighs.
Yeah.
And I thought it felt very good. I felt like it is about the same size and weight as the classic controller Pro, but the contours are smoother and they sort of fill up your hand better. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is actually be more comfortable to hold for a long period of time than the Pro controller is, which was already better than the original classic controller. So they're learning little by little, you know, and I feel like this is really, especially considering it's not tethered to a Wii remote or anything. It's really interesting to see here as almost like an afterthought at the show that Nintendo's showing their first really traditional game controller in a long time. I mean, you know, even
since the Super Nintendo.
As far as something that's really kind of on par with that on other systems, you know, I mean, you can include the classic controller, but it's a little bit different situation there. It was really originally intended for virtual console stuff, mostly.
And, like, the comments that I've seen for about, like, this new Wii U Pro controller were that the D-pad seemed to be at an uncomfortable place that you would have to reach too far. Mm-hmm. But, I don't have huge hands, and it wasn't a problem. I think that Rayman was played with the D-pad. I think that's how I played it.
I played it with the stick, but you can play it either way.
Yeah, and, I didn't have a problem at all.
Well, I didn't use the D-pad, but I did play Ninja Gaiden 3 with the Pro controller.
I didn't play it, but it looked really messy.
You know, that game sort of got very middling reviews on other platforms, and the rep there did tell me they're adding a fair bit of content for the Wii U version. So even though, you know, I played it on the Pro controller, I said, well, if I play it on this controller, how is this really any different than the version that's already out on the other systems? And he said they're adding some new levels and some new weapons and some new magic, and they're doing some refinements and improving certain aspects of the game that they got some feedback on. So will be some kind of direct, you know, maybe it'll be Ninja Gaiden 3 Black, you know, or whatever. It'll be kind of the second edition where they fixed some things and added some extra content.
Well, they added a bunch of stuff to Batman, none of it which I liked. So that's really up in the air.
I agree. So yeah, if we want to shift to Batman, that was the first thing I played.
Me too.
First off, did not look very good.
No.
And I think it's just a very rough demo. I mean, the first thing I saw was this texture on the wall, and it was like this sign said, like, this way to whatever building, right? And it had, like, an arrow. And it was almost unreadable. It was so blurry.
Super
I was like,
low-res.
What the hell is going on with these graphics?
And they just pop in, not even consistently.
Exactly. Yeah. I stood there for 5 seconds, and then all of a sudden it got really sharp. Yeah, so there's a lot of texture popping right now, and that's an Unreal Engine 3 game, so it makes me wonder if maybe they haven't actually had Unreal Engine 3 running on Wii U for very long, and they're still optimizing it, you know, or something like that. Because the texture popping used to be quite a common problem on Unreal Engine 3 games, and it's been largely sort of taken care of in the past few years. But now, if, you know, maybe they're kind of learning all over again with the new hardware. I don't know, but the game just...
It was a bad demo. The demo felt really thrown together.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to switch your item every room. And, you know, the one nice thing I will say about it is that the controls are exactly like the PS3. So I was able to get into it right away. What sucked is that the rep kept saying, okay, I got to stop. Every 5 seconds, stop now.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this, or... press this button, or here's how you attack. And I was like, just let me play the freaking game. I know that's his job, but you know. And the thing about it is the touch screen is used mainly for your inventory management, and it's like 2 or 3 extra steps.
Yeah. It doesn't make the game easier and more efficient to play like you would expect.
Yeah.
The way they've implemented it makes it feel more complicated to get out the item that you want. They really need to work on that. They really do. You know, in defense of it, you know, I will say that although we didn't have the thing we kind of thought, which is where you could put detective mode on the on the gamepad screen so you could see sort of both versions at the same time.
Yeah.
You could see the real world on the TV and the detective mode down below. You still see detective mode on the TV screen. But when you do the scanning, when you're looking for clues, you hold a button down and then you hold the gamepad up in front of you. And you kind of look through that, and it's based on motion, you know, and you move it around, and you look for the stuff. And that looked really cool,
and it
felt fine. The downside is, in Batman Arkham City, I don't think you actually use the evidence scanner very often.
Not very much. Just in some side quests, really.
Yeah, I mean, every now and then, you know, in a story quest, somebody will shoot at you, and then you're doing some tracing to figure out which direction the bullet came from or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you do use it, but it's not like something that you use very often. So I thought it was a really cool implementation, but at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, the stuff that you're going to use all the time is the item switching, and that did not feel good.
No.
So maybe you guys should put more effort on that and less on this cool item, the evidence scanner.
Now, the hacking minigame was kind of cool.
Oh yeah,
that was
new.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you use the cryptographic scanner to hack into a computer.
Yeah.
So do you want to try to describe?
Yeah. So, in the PS3 and 360 games, you just kind of move the analog sticks around
until
you find
lame.
The right combination. Yeah, it's very lame.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes forever. but with this game, you start hacking, and then you look down at the tablet or the gamepad, and you put your thumb or a finger. And hold it on the screen and move your finger around until vibrations get enough or a sensor bar gets all the way up. And then you hold it down there and you unlock a piece of
half of the code.
And it'll probably get more complicated as the game goes on. But while you're doing that, there's like a security laser sweeping across
the
screen.
It's like the line in Luminous, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Sweeps over every few seconds.
So you have to pop your finger up before that laser hits you, or else...
something bad happens.
Yeah, something bad happens. Like he fails it or something.
You lose your thumb.
It was interesting because I'm, you know, I'm feeling for the rumble, and I'm looking where my finger is very, very intently, and I'm trying to find what's the exact little sweet spot where I unlock it. Because you can feel that you're getting close, but now you're sort of wiggling around trying to find what's exactly the right spot. And it's very easy to forget about that line coming across. And the thing is, that line forces you to pick up your finger, and once you do that, you can lose where you were.
Your spot.
So you really kind of want to find it fast before the line gets there, because otherwise it's going to be that much more effort to try to get it back.
More engaging.
I thought it was the best part about the whole demo,
Yeah,
it was actually really cool. And a nice improvement over a part of the game that you actually do quite often in Arkham City.
I didn't like his hyper mode. Maybe it's just because the graphics turned orange and weird looking.
You're talking about when the armor builds up enough energy and you activate the new armor that he wears and use the bat meter.
Right.
And it sort of makes it to me, it looked like his hands sort of became
lightning rods, electrified
or something. It basically just makes you do more damage. I mean, the fighting doesn't change. You're still doing the same thing. And I thought, this is not really the feature that you want to build this edition of the game around. No. Like, it might look kind of neat, but the game doesn't need this, and it doesn't really change how you play.
I didn't think it needed the forced touchscreen explosive gel part either. Like, you can do that in Arkham City already just by holding down a stick and picking which one you want.
Oh, yeah.
But in this game, you have to, once you spray all your explosive gel packs, then you click a sonar button on the gamepad, and then it kind of zooms, the gamepad zooms out to an overhead view, and you pick which explosive gel you want to set off.
Hmm.
It's like an extra step.
That may be optional, though. You might be able to do it the same way with buttons you could before. I don't know. Yeah, it's not clear that that's an improvement over... Yeah, it's not real clear that you need to be able to do this. But the other thing they showed was the remote control Batarang. And boy, this was a wreck. Yeah. I mean, this was bad. It looked cool in the press conference when they showed it. I thought, oh, that's neat. Because the Batarang is a little touchy in the previous versions, you know, when you have to fly it through these holes and then you're trying to hit this little bitty switch on the wall at the very end. And it sort of flies faster than you might like. And, it's hard to steer. So I thought, you know, being able to tie it to the motion of the controller is smart. Because then, you know, if it's gyroscopic and it just really feels just right, that might actually make this part of the game better.
Mm-hmm.
In the demo, oh my God.
Made it so much worse.
The left to right motion was reversed. So
it was up and down.
It was almost impossible to control.
Yes.
Maybe tomorrow we should flip the gamepad upside down and then it'll be just right. I don't know.
And the second I did it wrong, like, you know, you throw your Batarang and he was like, okay, you can use the gamepad to steer. I was like, awesome. Oh, it went up and to the side. And then he was like, oh, you should use the sticks.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I will.
That poor guy probably spent the entire day watching people throw Batarangs into the ceiling.
He probably did.
Because that's sure what happened when I tried this several times.
I did too.
And it was infuriating. And at the time, the representative who was there was basically like, you know, it takes a lot of skill. You have to get used to it. And I'm like, no, it's broken. Y'all need to fix this. It's bad. And I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. But ultimately, with Batman, I'm still not really sure what the point is. They're certainly not going to sell, based on what we've seen, they're not going to sell this to people who already own Batman.
Oh, no.
And I thought there was maybe an opportunity for them to get people to double dip.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting to think, no way. They're trying to sell this to Wii owners or whoever.
People who haven't already played it.
Didn't buy it before.
Now, I do wonder if it'll have Game of the Year content.
I think it probably will. You know, look, Batman Arkham City is a fantastic game. But I don't really think they're making it better
based on what I've seen.
They're making it different, but I'm not really sure that they're making it better.
I'd rather play it on the Wii U Pro Controller.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't because I've already played it.
Well, I mean, if I had the choice.
Yeah.
And I hadn't played it before.
Yeah.
And Catwoman's armor suit looks stupid. It looks like something out of League of Legends or something.
Oh, man. I'm not going to talk about Tank.
it's like I've been told it's a retail game. It probably shouldn't be, but it was fun. I would buy it.
That's exactly what James Dawson said to me. He said, hey, I played Tank. I said, really? He said, they shouldn't be selling this full price.
No, they shouldn't. It's a port of like a 3-year-old arcade game.
Yeah, apparently.
And as far as I can tell, the player who plays it on the gamepad, the only reason that it's on the gamepad is because that makes it so they only have to put 3 split screens on the TV instead of 4. Because the person on the gamepad isn't really doing anything differently than the other players.
But it played better.
Here's the weird thing. I thought the graphics looked better on the gamepad screen than they did on the TV.
Maybe because they're blown up on the TV. Like you blow up. I played a lot of 3DS games where you could look at the 3DS, but you could also look at a blown up screen.
Yeah.
Awful on the blown up screen.
The resolution seemed low. But yeah, like I played the game actually both with the Wiimote and the gamepad, and the gamepad played a lot better because you've got the sticks. With the Wiimote, you had to play like with the as if like with the Wii wheel.
They had the wheel. Yeah. Oh, it was horrible.
Seriously? It was.
The motion control on the TV was horrible. It felt like you could only steer the tank in about 30-degree
increments.
So like you're constantly oversteering for everything. It's almost, and this is a game where you're supposed to be aiming your tank turret at other players. But I couldn't aim at anything. Yeah. It was horrible. Yeah, it did play much better on the gamepad with the joysticks. Tank is like, it was a strange demo. Yeah, really strange.
Let's talk about the next game.
It was very simple. I mean, it could be fun as like a really kind of cheap action game, but yeah, as a retail game, that's laughable. That's a bad idea. I played Zombie U. Did you guys get to try this?
I looked at it. No, I'm just so sick of zombie games. I just don't care anymore. Okay.
Well, yeah, I don't play many zombie games, so it doesn't affect me quite as much. I'm not into zombies all that much. But I'll tell you what, Zombie U, number one, graphically looks very good.
Yeah, it did.
It looks excellent. One of the best, probably the best third-party game that I saw in terms of visuals. Yeah. Maybe Rayman Legends.
For different style.
Totally different style. But it looked really good. I thought the controls were very well done, except that the aiming on the right analog stick was really touchy, really sensitive. And they weren't doing any kind of auto-center. So if you accidentally drifted up or down just a little bit as you turned, which was quite easy because it was so sensitive, your view would kind of tilt up or down, and then it would stay there. So then I was constantly like trying to correct and just get back to the center level so that I could actually sort of see in front of me.
That's got to be a demo thing.
I think it's either a case of early something, or maybe it's just something you can go in the menu and change the sensitivity. Yeah. You know, most first-person shooters have that kind of stuff. So I'm really not worried about it. For the demo, it was a little frustrating because I couldn't always do the things I wanted to do as quickly as I wanted to. But I don't really think it'll affect the final game very much.
But you said first-person shooter. JP said, oh, this is not a first-person shooter. This is like a survival horror.
Yeah, he said it was like Resident Evil.
You know, there are elements of Resident Evil.
The newer Resident Evil.
I would probably compare it more to Condemned. Oh, okay. I don't know if you've played that, but it definitely had that vibe. It's not a first-person shooter in the sense that I don't think there are going to be like waves and waves and waves of enemies at you or anything. It seems like you're usually dealing with only one or two zombies at a time.
Yeah.
Your ammo is fairly limited. In the demo, it wasn't extremely limited. But sometimes what was limited was, you know, it takes maybe two or three shots to take down a zombie, and in that amount of time, another one might be coming at you from a different angle, and maybe he gets up on you, so it's crowd management a little bit, which is kind of how the first couple Resident Evil games felt. Mm-hmm. Very atmospheric. It's a very dark game with a flashlight, so you've got all this dynamic lighting going on, and it's feeling like there's always something maybe slightly outside of your field of vision that you can't quite see. I didn't get to hear the audio, and that was my big regret, because it's the kind of game where you really want it. You want the sound to be good. I don't know if the sound is good.
I wonder if they'd have headphones in the Ubisoft booth in the South Hall.
Oh, yeah, they might. I would like to go. I heard the demo might be a little bit different over there.
Yeah? Yeah. I want to go over there to play Assassin's Creed.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, because there is that mode that they showed of Killer Freaks last year, where one player uses the touchscreen on the gamepad to place enemies for the other one. Yeah, so it's competitive, but it's asymmetric competitive. Yeah.
That's cool.
There's some stuff about Zombie U that really surprised me in terms of there's a lot of inventory management, but it's all real time. So it's not like in Resident Evil where you can pause and then go play around and move stuff around your suitcase, you know, and figure out what you want to use. It's all real time. So anytime that you want to open up your backpack, and dig around. On the TV screen, when you open your inventory, it sort of goes to third person. You see your character open up a backpack and dig around in it. And at that point, you can't really do anything up there. The inventory management is on the touch screen.
And meanwhile, zombies are...
That's right.
That's awesome.
So you're looking down at the gamepad, you know, taking items from a trash can or moving things or equipping a gun by dragging it around and everything. And the whole time, the game is still running. So zombies could be creeping up on you very quietly while you're doing this. So you're constantly kind of, like, you know, sort of worriedly going up and down. Is it still... okay, and the same goes for lockpicking. So anytime you find a door that you have to lockpick, there's a little mini game. And the game on the bottom is, you know, it's you just kind of move a slider back and forth until you feel a rumble or something. It's no big deal, but the exciting part is, again, the game doesn't pause. So while you're doing this on the touchscreen, the zombies are still coming on the top. And it's very nerve-wracking, actually. It's like a very simple thing, but you couldn't have really done it on other... Because, in most horror games, there's never a reason to take your eyes off the screen. In this game, they force you to take your eyes off the screen, which puts you in danger. And I thought that was very clever. Pretty cool. And even without the sound, even really without the good atmosphere that you would like to have while you're playing this kind of game, you kind of feel the stress that it induces. And that's what they're going for. So I liked it.
That reminds me of Dead Space Extraction did something similar, where when you did the hacking in that game, half the screen would be your character hacking something, the other half is necromorphs flooding towards you, and you're like, oh shit.
It was a little bit like that, except now you can't even sort of use your peripheral vision.
Nice.
Right?
I like that.
I mean, with the gamepad, you can't sort of hold it up, but even then
the idea is that the things you're doing
on the touchscreen are just involved enough.
Right.
that you have to actually pay attention to them, which means you're taking attention away from what's going on the TV.
That's cool. I'm going to have to try that tomorrow.
Yeah, it's very cool. I thought that the shooting felt pretty good, actually, when I could deal with the aiming a little bit. Felt the shooting looked pretty good. I thought the graphics were great. The controls all made sense, And the other thing they did for describing this is, I would never guess that this was a feature. But you apparently, every time you die, you only ever have like one life, basically. Mm-hmm. So when your character dies, which might take a few hits, but if a zombie gets up on you and really, if you can't shake it off or if you can't inject it with a viricide at the last second, then your character will die and that character will stay dead.
Yeah.
And it will respawn you at the last checkpoint that you found, like the last save point or safe house or whatever, as a different person.
Okay.
And that person will start with basically a different set of items and stuff like that.
Oh.
And then when you get back to the point where you died before, your previous character is now a zombie who's attacking your new character. And when you kill that zombie, you can loot it and get all the items that you had on the previous run through the game.
That is very cool.
So it's not like a roguelike where you could play the whole game and then die at the end and now you have to play the whole thing over again or something like that. Right. It's not like you lose all your progress. Because there will be these checkpoints, and I don't know how close together they'll be, but I thought this is a pretty cool idea. It's it really doesn't have anything to do with Wii U or the gamepad or any of that stuff. It's just a good idea
for a zombie
game.
Yeah.
So you have to fight zombies of your former self. You're basically constantly being reincarnated into different characters.
I like that.
It's good stuff, that's kind of what I liked about Zombie U. It's like, you say, well, it's a first-person shooter with zombies, and you think, God, how generic, how this has been done so many times by so many different developers on so many other systems, why would I care? You start playing it, and you start seeing all these weird little touches all over the place that really do make it feel like a very well-thought-out, very creative game that also appears to make very good use of the gamepad. And the other thing it had that I really liked is you have this kind of Metroid Prime scanner thing.
Ooh.
So you hold this thing, you hold a button down, and then you hold it up sort of in front of you, and you move it around, and it's an X-ray base. It looks like the X-ray scanner from Metroid Prime. And the display on the screen is really cool because it looks totally different than what you see on the TV, but it's like very high fidelity looking and everything, and you kind of get all these different shades of gray, and it's like and again, while you're doing this, you're not looking at the TV. The game doesn't stop. So, it makes you vulnerable. But when you find things that are of interest, they'll be kind of highlighted maybe. They could even be inside of other objects because it's like an X-ray scanner. And so when you do that, you sort of focus the reticle over that, and then you hold down a button on the touchscreen. There might be a physical button to do it too. But in the demo, it was you just hold your thumb over this button on the thing to sort of scan it. And then once you do that, it places a marker on it. And then you can go back up to the TV display, and now you have this kind of HUD marker over it so that you can find that and get over to it. And it'll sort of basically tell you what it is. So you know if whether or not you want to go and bother trying to get it.
So maybe a little like the scanning thing in Revelations?
It might be. And certainly, because you can do this all the time, it could potentially slow the game down a lot if you're stopping and scanning all the time.
But it could be rewarding.
it could be rewarding, and it also could be very optional. So I, you know, that's a kind of balanced thing that it's very hard to say from the demo. But I did think it felt good. It looked good. It sort of made sense. And I was like, okay, we need this in Metroid Prime. Definitely. Yeah. If this shows that it does work to me. So I was happy to see it and enjoyed Zombie U quite a bit, actually. I would like to play more of that for sure. I would especially like to play it with headphones.
I'll try that out tomorrow.
I thought it was pretty cool. Just, you know, be wary. The aiming is a little touchy right now. But, again, that seems like a very easy thing to fix.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. Yeah, pretty cool. All right, guys. Well, Zach, I don't know if I ever heard, what was your favorite game that you played? Did we already cover
it? It was Rayman.
Rayman?
Rayman.
Very nice.
Second place is Code of Princess.
Tell us about this. Where did you play this?
Atlas. In the Atlas.
Okay.
There's one little 3DS playing it. And no, this, there's two.
So Code of Princess was just announced for a North American release yesterday, I think.
Fall. Just said fall. The guy said, we hope it comes out in the fall.
Tell us about Code of Princess. What is it?
It's a brawl. Is it just a very simplistic side-scrolling brawler where there are three planes that you can jump between as your character? Mm-hmm. And there are enemies across all three planes. I was racking my brain trying to think of the game that had two planes to it that you jump back and forth between. And I got nothing. I just recently...
Mario Land Virtual.
For God's sake.
But sure,
why not?
Does it have RPG elements, kind of like...
Incredibly basic RPG elements. Like, the guy said there are up to 50 characters, which I assume you unlock as you progress, and they level up, and their stats get better.
Okay.
But you don't find items, you don't equip stuff.
So it's a very straight-ahead brawler, would you say?
Yes. Okay. I mean, you have a light attack, heavy attack, a very quick stat boost, and something else that doesn't even matter.
Why are people hyped up on this game? I mean, is it just because there aren't many brawlers? It's Japanese
and it's Atlas. I think that's why.
And I think, like, the main character, the main flashy.
They are. They're good. They're like... The backgrounds are 2.5D. The character sprites, it's hard to tell. It's like it's a little like Donkey Kong Country, where they used to be, they started out as an actual character model, but then were pixelized. But it looks much better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the main character is a nearly naked, busty woman.
Oh, right.
The rest of the characters I couldn't give a crap about, but...
Uh-huh.
It looked fun. And, of course, it being an Atlas game, it's going to come with a soundtrack and an art book and order now, limited run, I think the sign said.
Mm-hmm. You know, that could go for pretty much every Atlas game.
Oh, sure, exactly.
But, yeah. Okay.
But I gave the guy my card and I was like, I need to review that. Doesn't take much to make me happy, man.
Yeah.
Well, but it was fun. I mean, it's incredibly shallow. Incredibly shallow. Hmm. And the difficulty is like 1 to 5 stars on these stages. And I tried a five-star stage, and it was tough. I mean, and there is some strategy in which enemies you attack, get rid of first, mm-hmm. so that you can go after somebody else a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most basic game I played today.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
fun to check out. It's easy to miss, but it's in Atlas's little area.
Yeah.
They had a Persona 4 fighting game.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's a Persona 4 fighting game.
Yeah. Arc System sucks.
So, Guillaume, maybe one final game, something you'd like to,
to highlight? Game & Wario.
Okay.
I played the 4 mini games in there. They're mini games, not micro games. It's not a WarioWare game at all.
I only played one of them, but it was about 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, this is definitely not WarioWare. But it does have the characters from WarioWare, right?
Yeah, it does. So, like, the game that you probably played was the one where it's kind of this shooter where you shoot arrows at robotic Warios.
It's really, you say shooter, it was really kind of it's like a shooting gallery.
Right.
It's like it's first person, you're stationary.
Band on McCree style?
No, not quite like that. It's more like Duck Hunt, you know, you've got the game in We Play where the targets come out.
Yeah.
You know.
And so you're holding the gamepad vertically, and you've got your bow and arrow on the screen, and you you know, you draw the arrow and you release it. And the farther away you draw the arrow, anyway. The
farther the arrow flies.
Yeah, the harder it flies, and then, like, the harder you hit the enemies, like, they're going to reel back, and, like, you can set up combos that way. Like, if you knock back the enemies into each other, then you make more points. Mm. You make chain reactions.
And you aim it by sort of moving the gamepad around. You've got to turn sideways like a book, which is interesting. And you're aiming basically with the gyroscope.
Yeah. And again, like with the same pitfalls that aiming with the gyroscopes usually has. So like a couple of times I was off center and I had to aim basically like to the left of the TV to aim actually at what I wanted. But the game was still fun, and it was like, the level was like 3 minutes long. It was just one level, and then with the pretty big boss fight.
The boss was cool.
Yeah, and once you know what you're doing, like, it's pretty easy, but then again, it's a demo. It's probably like an early level. There were three other minigames for the Game & Wario demo. The second one that I played was basically this iPad crap that, you wouldn't pay, you know, like, you probably wouldn't download it for free. Or, well, actually, maybe.
You wouldn't pay
for low barrier to entry.
I wouldn't
there.
Pay for it. But, yeah, like, it's, you know, you've got on the screen, like, you had this 3D view of a Mii going down the slope. But on the pad, you had this 2D overhead view. And it was extremely basic, and like there was no relief there, like there was no depth. So like
no topography.
Yeah, like it didn't look like sometimes like I was on a jump, I didn't know I was jumping because it didn't look like anything. Yeah. It was extremely like stick figure like. It didn't
Wario.
Look good.
That looked like a WarioWare game then. That part.
yeah, and it was extremely short, and like you were basically just tilting the pad left and right to slalom and to take jumps, and to you shook the controller when you were hitting a jump to make figures, and it wasn't really that fun.
So what's the main graphical style if it's not WarioWare? Is it still two-dimensional sprites running around?
It definitely seemed to be 2D artwork.
Well, the robots were 3D, weren't they? I can't even remember now. It didn't really strike me as the Wario style, but it didn't strike... Was it kind of like Flash?
I only saw one of the four, so... A little bit like a Flash game, maybe. Yeah.
That's too bad.
You know, I did definitely feel like Shield Pose, the demo from last year, has to be a part of this game. They're not showing Shield Pose at E3 this year, but... When I saw what Game & Wario is, and I saw the art style of it, and I saw the length of game that it is, and the kinds of stuff that you're doing, I thought, this has to be what Shield Pose will be a piece of.
Yeah.
Right. The third demo that I played was this, you are a journalist, you try to take photos of these five perps, or whatever, and so you've got their portraits at the bottom, and you have to find them on the scenery, like you've got different buildings, and obviously like you've got like all sorts of people like looking out their windows, so you have to find the right person and to take a picture with of them using the gamepad. Like you point basically the screen, the gamepad over the TV, and it acts like your camera, and so like you try to find the correct person, and then you're graded on how good the picture you took is. So I lost points for like the person had his eyes closed. If like they're off center, you're gonna lose points. If they're not looking straight at you, you're gonna lose points. So there was, you know, like there was opportunity to try to better your score that way. But yeah, that was pretty fun. But again, like, I feel like I've played something like that somewhere. I don't know where and when, but it was like it was an interesting mini game. But there wasn't much I thought that differentiated the mini games and Game & Wario from the mini games at Nintendo Land, which I'm not going to go into. But like it seemed to me like it could be part of the same collection.
Yeah, you know? I agree. From what little I saw, actually, I played the one Nintendo Land game that I played, Attraction is what they're calling them. It's really a mini game.
Yeah.
was Takamaru's Ninja Castle, and it actually plays almost exactly like the Arrow game from Game & Wario. So yeah, I mean, they're showing two different sort of minigame collections here, and we now know an awful lot about Nintendo Land from the developer roundtable. We really don't know anything about Game & Wario, and so it's not very clear how these are different or why they're being separated into two different games.
Because they need to put out another game. Call it WarioWare and...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is not WarioWare. Well, I know, it doesn't have that manic style to it, you know, and it doesn't have the quick pace. So that's kind of the strange thing, is that the length of the games and the, you know, the amount of time that you're spending, and, you know, they escalate. I mean, the Arrow game, it gets more and more hectic and complicated as things go on. It culminates in a boss fight. I mean, this is all much more than you would get in WarioWare from a single activity.
Yeah.
It's more like what you get in maybe Wii Play.
Right.
And Nintendo Land is already quite a bit like Wii Play, except more, maybe it has more depth. You know, Eguchi was talking about that at the round table, and, you know, it's better for single player and stuff like that. I take him at his word for now.
Yeah. I mean, they said the same thing about Wii Sports and Wii Play.
They did. They actually did spend some time on Wii Sports Resort kind of talking up the same kind of thing,
how
there's a lot of stuff challenge to do for single player, and it had achievements and that kind of thing. And I mean, it definitely had more appeal in that way than the original Wii Sports, but not enough for my taste.
I think it's funny that, you know, in Wii Sports Resort, the sword fighting minigame is the basis. Sword fighting and archery were clearly the basis for Skyward Sword. And then now Skyward Sword is the basis for this Nintendo Land Zelda adventure, which has sword fighting and arrow shooting.
That's funny.
In kind of a Mii universe, so.
Yeah, that's a really good observation.
Snake eating its own tail kind of thing.
The last minigame that was in Game & Wario was this multiplayer thing where you had to, the person with the gamepad was basically the only one playing. Like, the other people had to observe on the TV screen.
Oh, yeah.
So you made sure that no one was looking at your screen while you were selecting one of, like, 20 different Mii-looking people. And then the game starts, and you have to grab, like, it's just, like, the city. You've got tons, like, crowds of Mii's going around, and you've got these apples popping around, and you've got to eat, like, 4 apples. But you got to make sure that no one knows, you know, the other players don't notice that it's you who's eating them. So you got to try to, you know, like, simulate being, like, a dumb AI character. And you have
like
to...
Like Assassin's Creed multiplayer.
Well, kind of, you know, in a much more limited way. But yeah, and, like, you hide in, like, the different crowds. And, like, when the view is obstructed, you know, you grab the apple and you try to, you know, do it with, and then at the end, you know, the other people have to guess, oh, okay, so which one was it? And yeah, I lost to that, like, the guy found me out, but by chance, he says.
That could be fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was interesting in the way that it was only playable with the game pad and, like, basically you would pass it around. It was,
take turns or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the other people playing actually don't even have a controller at all.
No, they're just watching the TV.
Yeah.
They should make a game where, when you'll get this reference right, they should make a game where on the gamepad you have a shape, and you invite hot graduate students to try and guess what shape it is, and then if they guess right, you put it up on the TV.
I see. When they guess wrong, you zap them.
You zap them.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, that's Game & Wario. It's a very strange title.
It doesn't sound very fun.
It's just not, there's not much to it from what they're showing. And it really doesn't have an identity yet.
And that last game is very much like Sput the Sneak and Wii Party. So, the recycled ideas a little bit, I thought.
Yeah. Also, I think Game & Wario is a terrible title, I
guess. It is.
It sounds like they're going for some kind of satire or play on Game & Watch, but it doesn't actually play anything like Game & Watch. So it also doesn't really play like a WarioWare game. It certainly isn't a Wario platformer. What does any of this mean? It's just a very strange title.
I think it's just by the Wario team, you know?
Yeah, maybe so, but...
Maybe it'll be re...
They like their characters.
Yeah. Okay, well, the last game I will talk about is LEGO City Stories. No, LEGO City Undercover. It used to be LEGO City Stories. LEGO City Undercover. we saw a fairly extended, you know, sort of look at this morning at the show, and yeah. I think a lot of us were kind of more interested in it than we expected to be. It was, you know, kind of impressive looking, you know, and playing it, although the demo was very buggy, and I'm trying to look past some of the problems that I had with it. But I thought it was pretty fun, and I thought the idea of having a sort of open world Lego game is certainly more interesting. I'm more yeah. interested in it than I have been in any of the other Lego games.
I played 2 Lego games today. I'm sick of Lego games.
Yeah. They're just kind of overly simple, right? They're very guided experiences. They're very straightforward, and it feels like they're more about collecting things than actually yeah. doing things. Well, in this game, it's because it's objective-based. They're kind of giving you... I mean, the demo has you going after 3 different bank robbers, and you catch each one of them in a different way. One of them, you're sort of scanning for him, and you find him hiding, and then you have to solve some puzzles in order to catch him. Hmm. Another one you have to chase down in a vehicle and bust up his car. It's made of Legos, of course, so if you just ram it a few times, it knocks all the Legos off. And then you just have a little foot chase where you run after him and you get close enough and you tackle him. But these things are much better than running around and collecting a lot of little studs,
yeah.
right? And there are studs in the game, but you sort of just pick them up on the way, you know, as you're doing other things.
That's not your goal.
Right.
Right.
And just, like, causing mayhem in a Lego city is funny in itself. And the game has a good sense of humor as well. Like, in addition to that, like, the dialogue is actually funny, you know, and, like, the visual gags as well.
They've always been pretty good about that.
Yeah. 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 But to me, the gameplay was kind of more interesting here than it has been in other Zelda games, and the idea of but the idea that this is an open world where you can kind of explore, and maybe there's secrets, and, you know, if you go to a place and you didn't find it very interesting, maybe you don't have to go back, you know, so you can kind of focus, and there will be kind of a free play mode. I don't know if maybe that's the kind of the default mode, and if you don't take missions, it's just always like that. Maybe it's a separate mode you have to select, but there will be kind of an open city mode where you just basically go around and kind of do things, you know, but do whatever you want. And it's
GTA,
not
GTA Lego City Stories.
It very much feels like that. Yeah, actually, all the vehicles handle differently. You can just jack any vehicle that comes by because you're a cop. Right? You can do that.
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was... And by the way, it looks very nice.
It does look
the
good.
Graphics are surprisingly really good. There's just a lot of great HD texture detail. And even though it's Lego, of course, and the geometry is fairly simple, I really felt like there was a lot going on in the environments, you know? And if this game really felt to me like they had taken the time to put a little bit of polish on the look of it that you didn't necessarily see in all of the Wii U demos that we saw today.
Yeah.
So I came away fairly impressed by it, actually.
Shot.
And then immediately after you left, I played the second part of the demo, which was more of a traditional Lego level.
So it still has that.
Yeah, it does. Like, I had to, like, go into a mine and then, like, find the right costume, the minor costume, because with that I could bash some rocks, so...
Well, that sounds Lord of the Rings game I played today.
So, yeah, there was a lot of bashing and building stuff, but at least at the end, like, it culminated with me building a warp pipe, and, just, like, in the trailer, so that was cute.
But when you say building, you mean standing by a pile of bricks
and holding down a button, yeah.
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 That's the thing, like, I feel like, especially now that you have a touchscreen on your controller... Maybe actually building something out of virtual Legos could be a part of the game.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Put instructions on the screen.
Sure.
I'd love it.
But just, you know, pull out the stylus. Here's some bricks. At least put them in the right places so that you build something that just seems a lot more fun than walking up to a pile of things and holding a button down and watching it magically build itself.
You guys remember that old PC game, Lego Island? That was like the first Lego game. And it was an open world game.
Is that the prequel to Dead Island?
Yes. and you're a skateboarder, and you can go all around this pretty big Lego island and compete in skateboarding races, which are horrible. But the rest of the game is cool. You make deliveries, and it's a fun little thing. And what you're describing reminds me of that.
Yeah.
Very early.
You know, I enjoyed it more than I expected. Yeah. I'll say that. I think it's different enough from all the other Lego games, and boy, there are a lot of them, and they're all pretty much the same thing. Yeah. And this, at least, does feel like it's doing something different.
So, now, to prepare me for tomorrow, what's buggy about it?
It crashed on us a few times, and there's a lot of weird character clipping. And sometimes when certain events are supposed to happen to progress the story along, there's kind of a long delay before they actually activate.
Okay.
Which kind of made me wonder what the heck was going on. And then all of a sudden it would happen.
Pikmin crashed on me.
Hmm, okay.
Yeah, we were right in the middle. No, we were like 2 minutes into the mission, and it just back to the title screen.
You know, that's E3.
Yeah,
oh, this sure. stuff yeah. happens. It'll all get ironed out. But it can be frustrating when you've waited a long time in a line to play a game.
I had waited a long ass time for that game.
Yeah. Pikmin's been busy.
Dude, people who come to E3 who've never played a video game before, and you're behind them?
Mm.
Maybe the most frustrating thing about the show for me.
Yeah, I've got I've got a scoop. I think you can get at least halfway through every level in the new Super Mario Brothers demo without running. Because
there's
this girl who never touched the B button throughout her whole session. And she never finished any level, but it wasn't because she couldn't make a jump from
this game is so slow.
Yeah, seriously.
The guy who I was behind, Rayman, I don't think he'd ever played a platformer before because he fell onto spikes. He fell down every pit he came across. He hit every enemy. But he'd laugh. He'd be like, "That's great. Let's try again." You know, 15 minutes later, come on, dude.
If he's having a good time, I'm happy for him. But it's kind of at the expense of your chance.
Everybody else to
see more of the game.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what E3 is like. It's always
it's like fun though in its own way. It's chaotic fun.
It's kind of fun to watch other people play games, which is not something that I do very often, actually. Yeah. It's interesting to see the very diverse skill set that people bring to these games. And that the other thing is, and we always get comments when people watch our videos, they say, "Wow, you guys really suck at these games." You have to realize, in some cases, we might be the first people outside of Nintendo to ever play these games.
Yeah.
No one knows how to play it correctly. We're learning. By the time you watch the video, maybe you've seen 5 other people play it.
Hopefully some of them are worse than us.
but that's quite the possible. Trick. Like, you watch a person play before you, and you learn all their mistakes, and you avoid them.
Hopefully.
Yeah, it happened to me at the Batman demo. Like, the guy in front of me, I listened to the whole demo through 2 guys in front of me, and by the time I got up there, it was like, I know what to do. But he still stopped me every 5 seconds. He's like, "I have to, I'm sorry."
That's what he's trained. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. That's going to wrap up this episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and we will probably be back late tomorrow with at least a little bit more, maybe some third-party stuff.
Yes, please.
All right. Cool. Awesome. Check it out. Also, should note there is a home team episode with James and John and Greg Leahy talking about the press conference stuff from their perspective at home.
Ooh, nice.
John and James both had the day off, so they were able to record with Greg quite early in the day, so that's how we managed to pull that off.
Right on.
So you will definitely want to check that out, and there was also a reaction show by the Connectivity crew posted today.
Oh, cool.
So we got podcasts growing out of our
ears. Dude, I got to go get my iPod and download.
I know. I don't know when I'm going to get to listen to any
of it.
But I'm looking forward to it
on the plane on the way home.
That's right. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Pop, pop.